Hello, my friends, and welcome to the 487th episode of the Sales Podcast. I'm Wes Schaefer, the Sales Whisperer, your host. Today, we've got Mike Searock. He is releasing his book today, February 5th, 2021. So we coordinated the interview and the publishing of this to support his launch. Great guy. We get into really some meaty personal things, the adversity he has overcome, why he keeps his hands full, why thrust is a must, how to overcome procrastination, and the multiple things he's doing to create multiple streams of income and growth while everybody else is hunkering down. There was a little bit of a gap here since my last episode. You know, with the storming of the Capitol and Bitcoin and GameStop and, you know, whatever. Just got a little bit busy. I'm trying to do more book reviews. I'm going to go through my own book here in, I don't know, probably take me a couple more months doing, you know, a few chapters at a time. And then dive deeper into some deeper books, actually. And then I'm looking for different types of guests. I may even bring on a co-host. I don't know. I haven't reached out to anybody, but I've been thinking about it. Just ways to spice things up. You know, this summer will be 8 years of doing this. And I love it. I've gotten access to great people, great insights. I learned something on every single one of them. I want to make sure you keep learning. It's helping you move the needle, you know, as we are well into 2021, which basically told 2020, hold my beer. You know, folks may need some different tools, different approach. While I think the fundamentals never change, maybe sometimes we need a new spin on it to freshen up the old proven path. So that's just what I've been pondering. I'm doing this on February 2nd, this intro outro. And as soon as I upload this to my team, I'm heading to Phoenix. First time meeting with clients face to face, man, I think since the pandemic started. As crazy as that is. But the reality is, I didn't meet face to face with a lot of clients. I've worked from home since the summer of 2000. I've worked from home for myself since late 2006. And over all those years, I've barely met my clients face to face. I was using the phone. I've used all types of online tools, you know, from GoToMeeting and Skype and whatever, you know, I'm using Zoom now, but you know, use what's available. And, so I didn't really suffer during this transition. We've homeschooled our kids for 13 years. And, you know, my oldest, older kids that are in college, right? So I've got two that are graduates. Well, Matthew, he graduated during COVID. So it was a little bit of a shift, but he was in his last semester. My daughter was in her last semester of high school, but she had been homeschooled up until ninth grade. So that wasn't a big shift. She spent her first year now, San Diego State. She's been at home. My next daughter ended her freshman year at home. And she actually may drop out of high school and go back to us homeschooling her. And then the other two girls only know homeschooling. So it wasn't a big shift for us. And, you know, so I empathize with those that have had these big shifts because it's been brutal. And I think, unfortunately, 2021 is going to be even rougher. They're still talking about lockdowns and whatnot. I believe the overreaction to COVID has been political, certainly been politicized since then. You know, we all had it. I know so many people have had it, and I know it's real. I mean, my neighbor died April 2nd, the day before my 50th birthday. He was the first sheriff here to die. His whole family got it very bad. So it's a real virus. But I think people, rather than admit that they were wrong in how they reacted to it, they just doubled down. And so the law of unintended consequences are going to start rearing its ugly head here in 2021. You can't suppress paying mortgages. You can't suppress businesses, 25, 50, 75%, 100% for some stretches. As the government takes their boot off of our throats, we're going to realize that some cannot be revived. And as we deal with that ramification, as the government is forced to take the punch bowl away, in the form of trillions of free money, as the Federal Reserve realizes it's becoming more impotent in it, how it adjusts, monetary policy, I think we're going to have some tough times coming ahead. So, again, that's why I'm looking at how I do this podcast and what I can offer you to help you navigate these waters. So if you've got some ideas, if you have some guests you think would be great, I'm all ears. Shoot me an email, find me on social media, and I'm happy to take a look at that. If you need some one-on-one help, on my call here, I've got a new client, long-term client of software. We've helped him, but now I'm doing a 90-day private coaching with him, starting that off during my drive to Phoenix. But some spots there for some private consulting. If you need group training and consulting with your team, like I'm doing in Phoenix for the next couple of days. I'm willing to travel. I'm not worried about the Rona. I've already had it. I do hate the policies and how they literally woke me up flying back from Tampa. Dude woke me up, telling me to put my mask up over my nose. But I digress. I will travel. I will come see you. Help you and your team grow if that's what you need. And if we both agree, that's the best way to do it. So just go to thesaleswhisper.com and hit me up on the contact us. All right. So now, without further ado, let's bring on Mike.
Mike C. Rock, all the way from Maryland. Man, you are doing a few things. What are you made of? Founder? Is that right? Is that you?
Yes, Wes, that's it, man.
All right, man. Make sure you got the right C-Rock. Welcome to the Sales Podcast, man. How the heck are you?
Doing great, man. I always start every interview with gratitude and just want to let you know I'm appreciative of the fact that you allow me to come on here and share. And it means a lot. I'm humbled to have the opportunity, man.
Man, it's great to have you. You've got your own podcast, What Are You Made Of? Yahoo Finance, Top Business Leaders to Follow 2020. CEO of People Building. Good grief, man. Why don't you save some kittens from a tree or something? Just round this thing out.
I do that too.
There's just not room on LinkedIn to put it, huh?
Yeah, no. I sent my kids up there to get them because I'm allergic to cats. So I don't mess with the cats. But yeah, man, I got my hands full and I'm doing it on purpose because I'm just trying to see what I'm capable of, what I'm made of, so to speak. So
most of us don't get pushed, huh? Kind of just being comfortable through life.
Yeah. That's my kryptonite, man. I wake up, I want to be a hero to people, a superhero, but I really have this thing inside of me, which I think it comes from being around a lot of broken people growing up. And I want to help people, see the greatness that they have inside of them and put them on track to get it. But, I've gotten to some really dark spots in my life when I was comfortable and complacent. Yeah. And as soon as I start to feel that thing, man, that's a little bell rings and I'm off to the races. Right. So yeah, 100% agree, man.
How do you juggle that though, between, not being so idle you can goof off, but then redlining it, right? And just driving it into the ground.
My wife usually speaks up and sounds the alarm. I go hard and then she's like the, what is it called in a car?
Governor?
Not the governor, but the thing. It's like a thermostat thing. Is it a thermostat that kind of blows when it gets too hot?
Well, the tachometer.
Something blows and then it's like, okay, take an audit here of what's going on and just prioritize some things, take some things out, make sure everything that you're doing is going towards the life of your dreams that you set out, your mission. And if it's not, then you got to remove it.
Right.
And that's what we do. I just go hard, dude, because I think that I don't want to take any chance of if I don't go that extra step that I miss something huge. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a quick story on that. Like, I met a guy on Instagram. I message people like I did you. I have a way that I go about messaging people, lifting people up, encouraging people. And then we connect, and then I come on shows. And I got a guy on Instagram one time, and he answered me. And then I brought him on in live on Instagram. We sat there and chatted. And here we just went into business together on a, like, a project that could turn into hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I'm always afraid that I'm going to miss that one relationship, you know? So
when it comes to, like, you know, you're going hard, right? Are you a, like, a specific goal setter? Like, I'm going to achieve these things by this time, or is it like, I'm going to go in this direction? I know it's the right direction. And as long as I'm making progress, then I'm happy with making that progress.
Yeah. Success to me, the definition of success is having your ideal picture of where you want to go, who you want to be, where you want to be, and who you want to do it with, and always making incremental progress towards that ideal situation. So I have a saying, thrust is a must. And that lines up with my concept of rocket fuel, which I'll talk about later, but thrust is a must. You always have to be moving forward. I'm not a big guy on setting time frames and things, because I go hard regardless. I don't have a problem with, like, procrastination and stuff. So to me, I just go. Now, some people have procrastination problems. That's because they have a responsibility problem. They're not taking 100% responsibility. And Wes, what I've found is when you don't take 100% responsibility for things, the blame game starts, and also the waiting game starts. You're waiting for someone else. You're waiting for something. So I take 100% responsibility, which allows me not to have to put deadlines on things, and I just go.
Right.
And every decision I make, thought that I have, word that I say, and action I take goes towards my goal instead of away from it. Very simple.
How do people get there, though? Right? We're in this victimhood society now. It's like being a victim is virtuous, at least online, right? Everything you see, like, and we know that's not, but that seems to be the norm. I mean, does somebody have to hit rock bottom?
Sometimes,
you know?
Yeah. Sometimes I think what it comes down to, excuse me, cause I need to whip my whistle. I think it comes down to really understanding. Here's the thing. When I said responsibility, 100%, when you don't have that, and you're not taking ownership and being in control, you're giving control up to someone else. That's one. You become a puppet instead of a puppet master. I don't know anybody that wants to be a puppet, but yet they'll go ahead and leave responsibility to someone else. They don't know something. They're lacking data and the correct information, or they're confused. So you have to get the game right, and you got to get them the right information. Here's the thing, though. I just thought about this last week. I know it's not right to blame people. Right. I know that it's 100% response. I take responsibility, man. What could I have done differently? What can I control? Right. But the other thing I thought about, and if we can get this picture painted to people, when you blame other people, it never feels good. Here, you're trying to blame people to alleviate the responsibility off of your shoulders, but yet you feel like shit. Excuse me. Am I allowed to? You feel like crap on here when you're pointing a finger and Wes did it, man. It was Wes. Deep inside, you don't feel good. And you'll notice the people that have the victimhood mentality are never happy. They're miserable. So if we could paint the picture to say, hey, does it feel good to blame people? Let me tell you something. When you take responsibility for something, even if you don't think you're wrong, and you say, now I'm not talking about legal, if you didn't kill somebody and they're trying to, I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about in a situation, say, look, hey, that was my fault. I apologize. It diffuses situations right away. It makes you feel good to take responsibility. And the other person has, it takes the wind out of their sails if they're coming at you about something. So, I think there's painting the picture with people, and we just got to continue to do that and be committed to it.
Yeah. Did you're talking about being in a dark spot, being around, I'm just going to assume like a tough situation. I don't know if you hit your own rock bottom or seeing others, but how did you either climb away from that or thrive within it and help bring those up? Because, dude, I've had 470 something podcasts now, episodes, and I've spoken to a lot of people that hit that rock bottom. Divorce, health, financial ruin. And I've asked this a lot, and then most of them have said, yeah, sometimes you just got to let them hit rock bottom. you know, how, when, and a lot of people probably going through dark times right now, right? COVID's been a kick in the pants for a lot of people. It's the holidays, with adds on extra reasons or opportunities for people to kind of have that pity party. You know, do you have a process or something you can steer people towards that help them self-correct?
Yeah. So I grew up in a broken home. I don't remember my parents together. So growing up, to me, could have had it worse. Don't get me wrong. Okay. I talked to a guy last week that grew up in an orphanage, right? So I could have had it worse. I'm not saying for victimhood or pity here. I'm telling you a story real quick about this. So I don't remember my parents ever together. And I did the child support battles, the custody battles, all that crap, all parents, step parents coming into the game. And then their agenda's got to be met. And it's just a mess. And as a kid, you're going through all this, seeing all this, and there's a lot of conflict. It came to a point one time where I was living with my dad for 3 years, and there, the conflict was going on so bad that it was taking it out on me a lot psychologically and mentally. I was, you know, traumatized as a kid. And from 8 to 11, I went through that. 11 years old, I said, I got to get out of here. So I told my mom to file court papers, get me out of there. In doing that, my dad was blindsided with the court papers, obviously, because I couldn't tell him I was living in a house and I didn't know what would happen. But anyway, he eventually confronted me when he got the papers. I came home from school one day and I sat on my bed for about 5 minutes because he told me to go to my room. And it felt like 5 hours while I was waiting for my hero, my dad, to come back and confront me. And my dad had these rough hands and big forearms. He had a masonry business, laying block and pouring concrete. I always looked up to him. He's my hero, man. And he always carried a wad of $100 bills in his pocket with a rubber band around it. He used to flash it around. And I looked up to him for that kind of stuff. So, but when he found out that I wanted to move with my mom, and I confirmed that, even though he told me that they don't have any money, they're poor and you're going to go there and they're not going to have everything you have here. And he takes that wad of $100 bills out, peels one off, crumples it up, and throws it at me and said, here, you're going to need this when you're living on the streets with your mother one day. And so when that happened, I'm a stubborn guy. Okay. I'm a stubborn to a fault. I don't think being stubborn is a bad thing if you're stubborn on the right things. And I'm also always been told by my mom since a young age, before I even knew the word leader, that I was going to be a leader and influence people. So that was imprinted in my mind early on before I even knew what that meant. So what that happened when you do that for someone young or someone that doesn't know any different, or you start imprinting things in your head, all your actions and words start leading into that direction. So when my dad told me that and threw that $100 bill at me, first thing, stubbornness kicks in. You're not going to win. I'm not going to need that. You're not dictating my life. You're not determining my future. I got this. And that fire was lit. From there, I thought to myself, I'm in this ordinary situation. Every kid goes through this. There's got to be other kids that were given up on by their dad. I'm going to show them how to have a great life and accomplish great things despite coming from this. And that's what went through my head. And so I didn't know how I was going to do that except to be a role model. I just went hard at everything I did, hustled. You know, if I had a job to do, I would do extra. And I just wanted to show people, because I always felt like my dad was watching to see if he was going to be right. And I wasn't going to let that happen. 30 years, I lived off that. Now, there's been other stories throughout my life where dark spots, you know, got into dark spots where it just wasn't, I got off my game. And I felt that. And then I get back on track and realize, man, I just wasted some time and I got to get back going again. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a book called Rocket Fuel, and that book's coming out February 7th. It's on sale now. And the book is all about some of those stories and anecdotes that lead me to understand a concept that I've developed called Rocket Fuel. And basically it is to turn all setbacks and letdowns and difficulties, all that toxicity, negative people, into conversion of rocket fuel for your future. So if you can think about, if you want to accomplish something, Wes, in life, you know, I know you said you're in the Air Force and you guys have a goal or target. The goal for that is to accomplish it, accomplishment, right? I'm going to hit that target. The things that stop you are not the wins and the successes and the encouragement and all that. It's all that other crap. And all that other crap comes into play. All that negative toxicity, rocket fuel, is no good until you use it. So I don't like to just eliminate obstacles. I like to convert them into fuel, because resiliency means getting back to that original shape before the setback. I'm not good with that. I want to blow through that. And so this concept I had, I was living off this thing where I was turning these setbacks into rocket fuel. 3 years ago, I decided to bottle it and share it with people. And that's what I'm doing, man. And so, yeah, dark place, been there, understand that I don't ever want to feel that way again. I don't like the way that feels in my heart, my stomach, my mind. And I don't ever want anybody to feel like that. So it's all about getting out of that as fast as possible.
All right. So as you were growing up, how did you arrive at this place, right? Business owner and whatnot. Were you job to job? Did you have mentors? You know, what's the journey to get there? And, you know, are there some tips like that our listeners can you shave a few years off of their journey to get there a little quicker?
Yeah. So I started off in sales in 1998. I had some odd jobs before that. I worked for my grandfathers and uncles who were in the masonry business. It did some hard ass work. but then I got into sales in 1998. I dropped out of college with a 4.0. I just was disengaged, not interested anymore, and wanted to go out and start making money. But really what it was I spent years partying and I never partied until I got to college. When I did that, I lost focus and just, that's part of those dark periods where I got off track. And, I don't talk about that a lot. I'm kind of embarrassed by it because it's not me. You know, I grew up really focused all the way to 18, had a goal in mind. I was intentional about what I was trying to accomplish. And then I got off track. I started trying to please other people. I got like cocooned in a way of trying to please other people rather than focused and staying on my purpose. So when that happened, I went out and got in a sales job and I was cutting my teeth in in-home sales, handling objections, breaking the ice and building rapport with people, closing deals that night while you're in the house. And I did that for 9 years. And I look back and I'm like, man, part of that time though, I was going partying when I wasn't working, man, I was going out to bars and chasing women and doing stupid stuff, you know? And, I was always feeling this anxiety and feeling inside of me, like, I'm not built for this. This is not what like my purpose is, but I didn't understand that feeling. I was just dealing with this feeling. And I look back on it, I realize I was not going after my potential. And I think that anybody knows when they're underachieving or not doing what they're supposed to, there's a feeling that comes inside of you that tries to speak to you and lets you know, you better get your butt in check, man. You're not on the right track. And that translation to me wasn't coming through clearly for a while. And I think it had to do with, you know, drinking and partying. And, you know, when you do that, like marijuana, for example, it's a thing that's becoming legalized. And I didn't realize while I was smoking weed back in college, how much I was clouded during the time that I was smoking weed until after the fact, when I stopped and I look back and I'm like, wow, man, no wonder I was feeling like that. So yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I got into sales, and then from there I went into real estate and got into mortgages. I don't know. I think that you got to kind of follow your ideal life of what you would want to do in a perfect world. I think that's the first step that you do, because you're never going to go after something really great unless you can think of it and really attempt to. And so what I did was I wanted to be in sales. I wanted to build a team. I wanted to start building people and have an influence in people's lives. And that stemmed from that young age. And so I got into a business in the mortgage world where I could build a team and start developing the people and building them. And they could focus on the mortgages and I would build the people. And so I encourage people to do what you want to do. Like, you're going to have to do some stuff you don't want to do and you don't like. Don't get me wrong. You got to figure out how to make money. But at the end of the day, you should have some kind of grand vision of the most perfect life that you would want and start there and then reverse engineer backwards of how to get there.
Do you need to have that vision of the perfect life, or is it sometimes enough just to know you're meant for more? Right. And start dip. Cause sometimes like we're way deep in a hole. You may not know, oh, there's this beautiful oasis up there with hammocks and, you know, with the steel drums and, you know, like, dude, I just don't want to be bitten by rats and, you know, sleeping in mud.
Yeah, I get it. But to me, you know, we have a problem because we don't know what our true potential is. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things like, so, you know, I see your point with that, but I just don't want to limit myself or anybody else. When I talk to people, I don't want them to limit themselves. So what I always talk about is going into a desert, finding a, a lamp with a genie in it. You rub the lamp and the genie pops out and says, listen, I'm going to give you the ideal life. What would that be? And then really try to visualize it in your head and write it down and get it on paper, no matter where you are. Because here's the thing. Have you ever done the lottery thing when the Powerball is at 500 million or something? And you think about, man, what would it be like if I won that? Like, and it kind of gets you juiced up a little bit. Well, when you do this visualization of your ideal perfect life, it starts to get your juices flowing. You get inspired. And if you're feeling like crap, it's a perfect exercise to do to get you going again and get you some momentum. I think you just got to get that. You just got to get that thrust going, moving forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that why not do that?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't do it, you're not going to definitely not going to hit it. You're not going to come anywhere close. You're going to be just below that. That just survive mentality.
Right. So you're doing the in-home thing 9 years. How did you make that pivot into mortgages? Because for those 9 years, I mean, you were working for another company, right? And did you like immediately make the shift into owning your own business, or did you jump into mortgage, learn it, then do your own thing?
No. So I actually was doing that and I was just bored, like just burnt out, man. I hated it. I hated life. I just didn't like it. And I talked to my buddies and they all were in the mortgage business. And I'm like, guys, what are you doing? Like, man, we're doing this, you know, mortgages. And I said, all right, well, let me get my real estate license and maybe I can send you some business and I'll make money there. And maybe I'll build a real estate career. And the first year I got out of the water treatment business. I went into mortgages and I did good. I had top listing agent, top selling agent. The first year was doing fine. I just didn't like showing people houses. It just wasn't me. Yeah. And so like, well, you know what? That mortgage thing is the same thing as real estate, except I don't have to show the houses. Let me do that. Now, my best friend was my referral partner. I would refer him deals. And it was an hour and a half away from my house. And I'm sure there was mortgage companies around where I lived, but I wanted to work with them because I knew them and I thought it would be cool. So then for 5 years after that, when I made that switch, I drove an hour and a half each way to work. This is before remote was possible. And I would drive to the mortgage office and work from like 9 a.m. till, I don't know, 6 or 7 p.m, get back on the road and drive back. And I had a wife and a little kid at home, but I just had to do whatever it takes. So the lesson there, when I look back on that, I did whatever it took. And for 5 years, I did that and was just committed to learning the business, committed to building and figuring things out. And so the transition, when I did it, I took a line of credit on my house for about 3 months worth of income just to get by. It basically burned the ship's mentality, brother. And I look back on it and think to myself, like, it makes me sick to my stomach to think about it. I guess I always could have went back to the water treatment. Like I was doing in-home sales for water treatment systems. I could have always went back to that maybe, but I didn't have a plan B, man. Honestly, I was just like, this has got to work. Yeah. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger said, when you have a plan B, you start focusing on plan B too much. And then plan A doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I was burning ships mentality. And that wasn't the first, I'm sorry, the last time I did that either. So after that happened, we had a situation where that company I went to work for, I was there for 12 years and the owner started having money disappear and wasn't doing things the right way. And we were trying to run a company and build a company for him. And it just crumbled. And we had to switch companies. And when we switched companies, we burned the ships again because all the money that we had was stolen from us, kept. Mm. And at that point, I had to bring 22 employees to a new company. And the way it works is we run a division for a company. So the mortgage company is owned by individuals. And then we own a profit and loss center underneath of them. And we took 22 employees and I had to make sure those employees were paid. And I had to make sure I knew we could make money if we could just get it up and running, but we had just enough money in there to get it, like have enough time to get it going. But also we couldn't take a paycheck. So my partners and I took minimum wage because you have to get paid at least minimum wage in this business for 6 months, lived off of savings, anything that's what we had. I was running up credit card bills, burned the ship saying, this is going to work. Like I've never claimed bankruptcy before in my life, but if I have to do it, I'm going to go all out, make this thing work. And then if I have to claim bankruptcy, man, I mean, I'm sorry. Like I gave it my all, right? So we just burnt the ships and went for it. And we got in a hole roughly $175,000 with the company we were working for. Cause they basically gave us they were like, we believe in you kind of thing. And then 6 months, we were able to take a paycheck. And then from there, we never looked back. And it took us only 2 years, what it took us 7 years to do before, to build a company up to 10 million in revenue, annual revenue. Mm-hmm. So when you burn the ships, that's a lesson. When you burn the ships and you just commit, no looking back, no lifeline, you usually prevail.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that funny? It's like we stay too comfortable. So we never know. I think it was David Goggins talks about, I think he was the one that came up with that 40% rule.
Yeah. That's him. That's
right.
Him.
It was mm-hmm. his, right. And when we're ready to quit, what is it? When we're ready to quit, we have 40% more we can give.
Yeah. Or you're only at 40%.
Or you're only at 40% of your ability.
Or yeah. something like that. Yeah.
Either way, you got a lot really more you can yeah. give.
Yeah. It really makes you think, like your mind shuts off before your body's ready to.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that. I do two things, you know, I do jujitsu and a couple times a week I'm pushed through that. Like I'm tired or whatever. There's one or two guys that I wouldn't say they're full blown assholes, but it's not a pleasurable experience to train with the spar with them. Right. But our instructor, like he pairs you up with everybody. So you're not going to hide, right? You're not, well, I'm not really good with big guys. So I'll just avoid it. No, you're going to fight everybody, young and old, big, fat, strong, you know? And it's like, you feel like I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And you push through and you get them in, you know, either you get them or you don't get got.
Yep. Right? Yep. You're like, you survive.
All right. That's a win. I'm so tired. I mean, a 12-year-old should have tapped me today and that asshole didn't get me. So, I mean, we need to push ourselves a little bit, probably a lot, huh? Compared to the little cushy lives we lead.
Yeah. Without a doubt, man. I mean, that's something that I always say, I'm grinding like I'm broke. Like I don't know if you know Grant Cardone, the 10X rule guy, if I hear mm-hmm. this thing. He always talks about going to zero, take yourself to zero. And, you know, I just always think that way now. Like, I think I'm broke. Like, I don't have money. I don't pay attention to the fact if I have like reserves in the bank or anything. I'm like, I got to make it happen right now, because mm-hmm. that's the thing that made the difference for us when we were trying to make it, is that we had no options, man. And I don't want a fallback plan. I just want to go. And I want to be like that for people so they can see what it's like. And they see why you keep having successes and you keep leveling up is because I'm broke, man. Like, I'm broke. I spend money. By the way, I spend money. Now, I don't say I spend money. I should say I invest money in businesses and things that can like help me level up, whether that's mentorship programs or businesses. And so I take my money right now. I don't buy anything anymore. Like I rarely spend money on myself except for these things. And I take this money and I just get rid of it. Constantly getting rid of it. It's either going into businesses I'm investing in or things for self development, investing in myself. And I'm focused on this right now because I'm not scared, because I know I can make money. So if everything fell apart, I could make money somehow. And I have that confidence. But I'm big on just grinding like I'm broke.
mm-hmm. Isn't it funny? When you know how to sell, you know you can get by. Right? It's like no matter what.
Yeah.
Like I'm helping like three different companies. One sells, you know, to the short-term rental space, how to lease your houses out and rent them. You know, another is software and another is in this crazy, it's hard to even describe concisely, but in the marketing space, identifying prospects, blah, blah, filling in their data, very advanced stuff. And it's like, I sell all their stuff because I'm doing the script. Then I lead a Monday call. You know, I got import exporters. I got a videographer, you know, all these different things. I'm like, here's how you do that. Here's how you sell that. Like, dude, have you ever sold that before? Nope. Never sold that before in my life.
Nah. What's the problem? Right.
Yeah.
What's the problem and what's the solution?
Yeah. Just engage, ask them good questions.
Yep.
You know, and so I'll take the calls. I'm like, all right, we're going to record this. I'll do a few. I'll show you. I'm like, how'd you do that? I'm like, dude, just learn how to sell. Just learn how to talk to people.
Yeah.
Right. But everybody's afraid of selling. Oh, I don't want to be in sales. Salespeople are pushy. You probably get that, huh?
Yeah. I mean, really when it comes down to it though, if you're finding out, doing a good job fact finding with people and finding out what they need, what their needs are, where they are, and you're just solving problems for them, it's not pushy.
Right.
You know what I mean, I think it gets pushy when you are taking one thing. Here's the thing. Like, people approach prospecting where they're trying to sell things. And when you're prospecting, yeah, if you can get a sale on a prospecting call, or great. But the number one objective of prospecting is to get out of obscurity and get known, like let people know who you are and what you do. And at the end of the day, then you follow up with them, and that's when you get the sales. Mm-hmm. People try to sell on that first call when they're prospecting, and then they get pushy and they get aggressive with the people. And that's not the people aren't ready to buy right there. It's not like, that's not the arena for that. Yeah. And that's where it all comes down. And people just aren't trained for that.
Right. So like in today's world, if you're making prospecting calls, you know, would you be like inviting them maybe to a webinar you're doing, or to download something, or you just, is it like a, maybe a set script, just probing for pain and then trying to set an appointment later for a full on demo or appointment? Like, how would you approach
it? Yeah. Well, like for what I do right now, I don't have the time to make the phone calls.
Yeah.
Because I'm in so many other things. So obviously you see what I did on LinkedIn. You know, we message you, listen to a little bit of your podcast, comment on it, give you some encouragement. And then from there we engage with you. And then it's value add, encourage, get noticed, get out of obscurity, which I did. You didn't know who I was prior to that, probably. If you did, great. If not, that's on me. I got to get out of obscurity with you. So I did that. That was via direct message on LinkedIn. I do it on Instagram. I do it on Facebook, and I have a team that helps me. And we message people and like get engaged with them. Once you're out of obscurity, then you find out what their needs are. Well, for you, you have a podcast. It's about sales. I'm an expert in that field, so I can add value to your audience. So I'm solving a problem, even though there's not money transfer in hands here. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I do have a fee for being on here, but there's no money transfer in here. But I'm solving a problem. You had a problem. Not that you have a hard time finding guests, but I'm just saying you have some spot open. I go fill that void. That's all you got to think about. It's the same thing in sales. It's the same exact transaction that we happen here or have here, is that somebody has a need. You go find that person that has the need. They find out about you, that you have the solution to their problem. And then you just insert solution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, simplify it,
yep.
You know, but yeah, prospecting calls, like prospecting calls in the mortgage business, we're calling real estate agents. You know, we try to call, you know, 50 a week agents and develop relationships with 50 agents or more. The good guys are calling 100 and just developing relationships and getting out of obscurity, so that when they have that buyer come along, they're like, hey man, I'm going to call Mike because he's on top of his game. He's hungry.
So how does that work in your world? Because that's a competitive world, especially right now, right? Rates are so low. Housing's booming. You know, my son's a brand new agent. He's struggling a little bit because he's kind of learning what you already learned. Right? And they limit him to
my wife's an agent too. So yeah.
Yeah. And they're making him just be a buyer's agent right now to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And hell, in Southern California, you know, they're getting 50 offers in 72 hours. You know, I mean, no more open house because of COVID. So scheduled appearances, people are paying, you know, 10% over appraisal, all cash, you know, $10,000 earnest money, no clauses, you know, nothing, like, holy crap. So, and the mortgage guys, they're killing it, right? He knows a couple of them, like, holy mm-hmm. crap, maybe I should be a mortgage guy.
Yeah.
But it's got to be so competitive, right? Everybody and their brother going to be calling every agent saying, hey, yeah, use us. Use us to close.
Yeah, you'd be surprised deal. Because only the really good people are actually making the phone calls. And most of the real estate agent, I'm sorry, the mortgage people right now are focusing a lot on refis. So they forget about the real estate agents. And those people, those loan officers that actually still call on the agents during this refi boom are the ones that are going to continue to have the business when the refis dry up, when the rates go up. But at the end of the day, for your son and for anybody in sales and business, the solution to any of those problems, one is don't think about competing. Like, you got to get competing out of your mind. Like, you got to dominate. Like, even if you're not the best, he's just starting, right? He needs to start thinking, I'm the best. I am the best. I intend to be the best. I am the best. I dominate this market. And then write that down and consistently think that. What happens from there, all your thoughts, words, and actions start leading in that direction. And so the other answer is to get a big pipeline. You need a big pipeline of people, prospects. not a pipeline of actual sales coming through or contracts. You got to think big on the top line and build your top of your funnel as big as possible. That's where the error comes in. When you don't have that, and it's like this, then everything becomes a problem. Oh, there's no inventory. There's no houses on the market. Everything's under appraising. So-and-so undercut me. All these other things happen when the pipeline, the funnel at the top is small. The answer is you got to figure out a way to be obsessed about growing that top of that funnel. And then from there, man, you're rolling, because nobody's going to focus on that part, by the way, except for the super successful. So if you can get that right in your head, the rest takes care of itself, and you can have all those problems. It's fine. You got numbers.
No. Sales cures all ills.
No, big big prospecting pipeline has cures it.
Yeah.
Because sales will come from that. Like my guys come to me and they'll bitch and complain about something. And man, that agent's pissed because the appraisal came in light. Well, it ain't on us, first of all. We didn't do the appraisal. But if they're pissed and they don't want to submit, you need more agents. You need to be calling more agents. Because if one gets pissed at you and you had four, now you have three. If you have 50 and one leaves, you have 49. What situation do you want to be in?
Yep. Amen. So is it, if nobody else is making those calls, then it is easy to stand out. But I mean, if they're a decent agent, don't they have a decent relationship with one or two other good mortgage folks?
Yeah, but they're always one deal or transaction away from being pissed at that loan officer. And so it's a timing thing. Now, this sounds wrong, because this is not, I don't ever encourage this. But if you think about, a timing thing, when you go in let's say a husband's not treating his wife right or giving her attention. And then there's always some creep on the sides trying to creep in. Now, again, I'm not trying to label loan officers as creeps and doing this, but the point I'm trying to make is that as soon as they're not being paid attention enough by that loan officer, it's a timing thing, or a deal goes bad, it's a timing thing. And if you're routinely, consistently calling on them, just staying in check with them, not bugging them, just, hey, how you doing? Is there anything I can help you with? Be getting creative with your follow-up. There's all kinds of ways to be creative with follow-up. And if you do that, the timing thing, and you get the right time, then you perform, you're good to go. But again, you don't worry about one agent. You don't worry about one prospect. You try to get a million.
Yep.
You know, and that solves the problem. Most people don't do that.
Yep. Amen.
You got to be willing to do what others aren't willing to do.
Yeah, and very few are. And I've told him, and that's the thing. We can't want something for someone more than they want it. Right. And sometimes they just got to skin their own knees, because he's a good kid, just graduated college, no debt, lived at home, made the commute. It's all good. Right. And But working in my business, I said, look, dude, you can get certified on HubSpot, so I can pay you $50 an hour, I can pay $100 an hour, if you're really good. And I'm like, you got time, in the summer. Right. I'm like, so if you spend 3 months over the summer, you'll be really good at this. Not $100 an hour good, but you'll be good. And I can pay you, blah, blah, blah. And I said, and he would work a little bit, then he'd leave, and go goof off with his friends. I said, look, dude, you got to sit at that computer till your eyes bleed. Then you go rinse your eyes out and go work for 4 hours more. And you do that for a month. Then you might start to crack the code, but you can't want it for them.
Yeah.
Right. I just made it available. And then, all right, what? But now, things are starting to come around. Now he realizes dad might have a little nugget here or there to help him with. So we'll see.
It's difficult to get your boys to listen to you. I have a son that's 14, and same thing. I'm always fighting on trying to figure out the best way to get him to go after something, to respond. It's not easy. But the thing is that they're going to either learn from us fathers, or they're going to learn from the world.
So, or both, but
the fact of the matter is that you're not going to learn this lesson from me. You're going to learn from the world. And I tell you, I'm a lot easier, even though I'm tough on you. I'm a lot easier than the world.
Yeah,
pick your teacher, your teacher, brother.
Well, we don't know when we're young, but he's still young. He's learning though. It's all good.
Yeah.
It reminds me, cause you were talking about, when we open, like you wanted to help people, you want to be a superhero to people, you said, but can that get you into trouble sometimes? Just because sometimes people don't see, Jesus said, all right, no man's a prophet in his hometown.
Yeah.
Right. Like you bring the goods, but people may not recognize it or they take you for granted. You know, how do you keep that from dragging you down?
I don't, because I convert it into fuel. So like if I'm in this hometown here, I've had people laugh at me that make comments. I'm all over the social media. Like I'm omnipresent. Like I really listened to what my mentors told me, like follow the blueprint, get everywhere. So then once somebody sees me, they see me everywhere. And I do that on purpose. Now I'll go to the gym. I'll go to the golf course. These guys make jokes and comments. And I'm just like, keep talking, man. Cause that just fuels me. Like it just, the more they say stuff, the more I convert. And so then that keeps me going. Like I can't let up. If I feel like a down day, like it's a rainy Monday or something, I just don't feel like doing it. I do it anyway, because my dad is watching. These guys are watching, and I'm trying to be a role model to people, and I can't let people down. So that's what goes through my head. And so, yeah, in my own town here, it is kind of tough sometimes, but I just like, you got to convert it. You got to use it as fuel.
Yeah. Amen. And so your book is coming out January next month.
It's on pre-sale right now at mikecrock.com/book. That's okay. Crock with no K, mikecrock.com/book. And that's available. It's coming out February 7th, though. It'll be ready to go. And Grant Cardone wrote the foreword for the book. And it's pretty awesome. When I read it the first time, I got chills.
All right. I will link to that. MikeCrock.com/book. All right. That comes up. Got the video there. Got the glasses, man. You're looking all cool. Oh.
Yeah, we haven't made an announcement about the foreword yet. Publicly, but I'll just do it on these podcasts because they'll be coming out later, a little bit later. We're going to make
it. Yeah, this will come out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so we're going to be making an announcement around then. So,
yeah. You're the second guy today come out with a book in January. I think I need to write a book real quick. I don't have a January launch.
No, mine's February.
February. All right.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, good. Whew, then so, I'll do one in March. You give me
that time. So Grant's show, he's on Discovery Channel, Undercover Billionaire Season 2. And so that's January 6th. So if you haven't seen Undercover Billionaire, the first season, you got to watch it. Glenn Stearns does an awesome job. They basically give him $100, a beat up pickup truck and a dead, like a cell phone with no contacts in it. They can't use their name and they got to get dropped off in place. They don't know where they're going and start a business that's worth $1 million in 90 days. Glenn Stearns did it the first time. He got dropped off in Erie, Pennsylvania. I won't give you all the details because you should go check it out. It's 8 episodes. It's great. And then now Grant's doing it. Season 2, January 6th, you'll get to watch him. And it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of it, but yeah, Discovery Channel. Cool.
You know how he talks all this stuff, right? We know he's built this big business, but now let's see if you can start over and do it now knowing what you know and watch the steps and processes that he uses and how he converts setbacks. That's what I'm interested to see because we all think about that. What if you had to start over, or the people or something right now are trying to start from scratch.
Right. And a lot of people are being forced with that. You know, that's why I was wanting to ask you about the whole victim mentality, you know, cause it's easy. It's easy to fall into that. It's easy to say, oh, woe is me, you know, and you know, I want to help people build that back as well if they've been knocked down. It's crazy, man. It's crazy times.
Yeah, you know, and some people sit in it longer than others, but you know, there's some people that have had the best year that they've ever had in their life in business this year. And you know, it's what they're made of. Like it's how they're built, and they made the right decisions and took the right actions. Then there's other people that'll learn, and some people, you know, they're beyond help. They just don't have it in them.
Yeah. Yep. You just got to let them go.
Yep. Yep.
And then send them your book. All right, man.
Read Rocket Fuel. Read it.
All right. I'm linking to it. Mike C. Rock with no K. MikeCrock.com/book. All right, man. All the way from Maryland. Stay warm, my brother. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Wes. Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you having me.
Great. Have a great day.
You too, bud.
Blaming and waiting comes from not taking responsibility, and that leads to procrastination. Become a puppet master, not a puppet. It never feels good to blame people. The victims are never happy. You see that everywhere on the news, coming from Congress, people pulling our strings. It's crap. You hear it in business as well. You know those people that you work with. Do not be those people. Okay? We all have some kind of setback, some kind of skeleton in the closet. I mean, whatever. Okay. And I've always said excuses last forever. Success takes daily effort. So dig in, get that rocket fuel going. All right. Figure out what needs to be done and just go do it. Nobody wants to hear you complain. All right. Your competitors are happy to hear you complain. Those that support you, I mean, they'll maybe be nice and let you whine for a bit, but, you know, get it off your chest, but nobody wants to hear it. Okay. So just buckle down and get it done. Sometimes you do need help. Oftentimes the help you need is from a neutral third party. It's why surgeons don't operate on family members. They can't be neutral. So find someone. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's the private coaching. Maybe it's the on-demand make every sale course. Maybe it's the weekly implement tours, but whatever. Find the help that you need. Find the program and get after it. Okay. Invest in yourself. I am doing that as I make money. I'm literally hiring, joining one program, may join a different mastermind, and brought on an assistant, gave her more hours, and I'm hiring a contractor to help me with my own launches. So, you know, I tell you this, not in a selfish way. I eat my own dog food. When I tell you invest in yourself, it's because I'm doing it. Okay. So find the help that you need. Invest in yourself. But remember, you can overdo it. There's a lot of professional students out there. Buying a course doesn't help if you don't go through it. Buying coaching doesn't help if you delay the calls, if you make excuses for why the advice. And I've had people, I mean, just fight me on the calls. I'm just like, okay, hey, it's your time. See you next week. And I bet nothing will change. And it wouldn't. And there's no refunds, okay, on that. You hire me to give you advice. It's up to you to not follow it. But no sympathy for me if you don't, okay? So if you want some tough love, if you want somebody who's been there, done that, hit me up, okay? Go to thesaleswhisper.com. Go to the contact us. We'll set a time to talk. Hope you appreciate it. This interview. Go get Mike's book. Get my book, 79stories.info. It's called The Sales Whisperer Way. If you order from there, you'll get an autographed copy. All right. And it don't cost too much. The info is priceless. You can apply it and grow your sales. I guarantee. Thanks for listening. I'll go sell something.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.